I've never seen anyone with white nipples.
I'm gonna Google it right now. White nipples. White nipples.
Oh.
Wow.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, I regret it's that instantly. Puss. Fuck that shite. White people were a mistake.
When he goes to edit this.
Ah, he'll be fine. Lads and ladies, welcome to the Decade Old Podcast, North Tip's most comfy podcast, and that is fact. I'm here today and now, Ricky Travers, as your host, and to my left is Gloria Shannon.
Hello.
And to her left is Karen O'Sullivan.
Hi.
And to her right is Fitzy.
Hello.
So lads, how have you been?
Fine.
Good. He's so happy you called him Fitzy in that, Connor.
The fuck is Connor?
How are you feeling with your first hosting gig on the podcast, Richard?
I feel like this, as soon as the doctor slapped my hole, this was my role for life. I was born. The doctor handed me to my mum and said, this lad is going to host the Decade Old Podcast someday, Mrs. Travers. And she says, I know.
I'm not going to do any work during this. I swear, I'm giving you all the reins.
I gave you gin and juice, and this is how you would treat me, Ben.
Yeah, but are you going to edit him out, or are you going to, like...
Oh, yeah, fuck!
No, I'll edit it the way I'll always have, but I'm just saying, this is Richard's show from now on, so if this is shit, it's Richard's
Yeah,
show.
But you're still editing it, and you'll make me say horrible things like, I think Coolville sucks.
I never put that much effort into the editing.
No!
The only thing I do in the editing is edit out the bits where I sound stupid.
So you've never seen Scooby-Doo 2, Monsters Unleashed?
Yes, I have.
Then you should get the scoop. Nah, fuck it. Anyway, lads, that's enough small talk now for now. Today's films are from the second or third quarter of 2008.
But you see,
these things are all just a social construct. Like, it doesn't matter. It's just an illusion of telling things.
Okay, tell us what the movies are.
The movies are Mamma Mia, Diarrhea, Ponyo, What a Show, Tropic Thunder, What a Blunder, and The Dark Knight, but not the one with the plane scene. And Karen, you picked Mamma Mia, so you give us the quick rundown of that.
I did. Mamma Mia is the feature film based on the musical, which is based around the music of ABBA. It pretty much tells a story about a girl who's about to get married, but doesn't know who her father is. So she reads her mum's journal and realises she's got three potential fathers, so decides to invite all three of these random men to her wedding, and a bit of hijinks and comedy and a lot of singing ensues.
Now, Mamma Mia was a budget of $52 million and
You're
made...
You do that at the end of the show.
What?
At the end of the film.
Well,
is it?
That's what you...
No, this is yours.
This might be his style.
This is my fucking show now. I have the keys to the show now. So yeah, Mamma Mia, the budget was $52 million. The box office was a number too big for me to even fucking... So big they made a sequel about 12 years later. So lads, tell us now. What did you all think of Diarrhea here?
I loved it. I loved it when it came out. I loved it when I went to see the musical in May in the West End. I loved Mamma Mia 2. I think if you like ABBA...
Yeah, like I was raised on ABBA. My dad... loved ABBA, particularly the blonde.
God, love Joe.
Go on, Joe, mate.
So yeah, we were raised in ABBA's music. I think Dad would be greatly disappointed if, like, you know, his children couldn't at least sing a couple of ABBA songs at a party.
I thought it was a mediocre film with some ABBA songs in it.
It's kind of supposed to be mediocre, though. Watch the sequel. Waterloo's in the sequel. It's supposed to be a film that you... It's supposed to be chewing gum for the brain, whatever. It's not supposed to be thought-provoking. It's just supposed to be sit there with some friends and have a laugh and just forget about everything and sing some ABBA songs, and there's a vague storyline that goes along with it. It's like when you watch porn. You're not actually watching it for the storyline. You're watching it to see tits or pussy or cock or whatever you want to see.
So you were watching this to see Pierce Brosnan.
You're watching it to see a bit of silliness. And to have a laugh and to listen to ABBA music in it told from an actual, combining all the songs into a story. You're not watching it to be like, oh my god, this is groundbreaking, or, you know, this really made me think about my life.
Okay. You have to admit the concept of this musical going back in the day was such a good concept. Like, there's not many artists to have such diversity in their songs that you could put anything regarding a storyline together.
Right. I think the word you're searching for is disposable, right?
Oh.
It's just a disposable bit of fun.
Oh.
I wouldn't say
disposable's a bit mean.
Oh.
Like, as Richard said, the amount of profit on this film, the amount of hype around it,
but
shows you that it was very popular. It brought ABBA to another new generation, and a decade later, you'll have people in their 20s now still singing ABBA.
Is there any fear of ABBA ever dying? I mean,
I just want to understand what Gloria said. Now, maybe that's the wrong choice of words.
What Gloria
say,
sounds...
I think that's what she means.
Gloria sounds like she's on the offensive because one person called it shite ever once again. So
no,
now she has to get
in
the offensive and say, it may not be the infinite jest.
I'm not on the defense, but it's not. It's meant to be a feel... When I say it's meant to be a feel-good movie. It's not supposed to... like, make you rethink your life or anything the way, you know, some movies you come out inspired or like, oh my god, that was so interesting, or Jesus, you know, think about things. Whereas this movie, it's just kind of fun. But I will say, there's a great theme and storyline about friendship in this movie. I have thought of my, like, I have two very close girlfriends, other than, of course, Karen here.
Thank you.
My sister and one's my friend Kate. And that movie, it reminds me of the three of us when we're together and we're being silly, and it, like, there is a strong story about friendship in that movie.
Well, then surely it's more than just a bit of fluff then, right? If it ignites
some
emotions.
Yeah, it's done around a bit of fluff, but like,
it
speaks to me because I have a similar friendship to those girls have, but maybe not everyone has that similar.
If what you're saying, if I'm right and what you're saying is that it's a bit of fluff, then I only think something being a bit of fluff is like a minor criticism, because there can be good fluff and bad fluff, and I just don't think this is good fluff.
Yeah, but that's where I'm offended, because I'm like, I love this movie.
Like, I was raised by a single mother, so you can guess how much ABBA I've listened to in my lifetime, and like, I'm fairly indifferent to them. What does that mean?
Does that mean a lot?
Oh, come on now, Fitzy.
Well, I was raised by a mother with married to my dad, and I still listen to a fucking lot of ABBA.
And I was raised by, like, a happily married couple, and it was my dad who listened to most of the ABBA.
Yeah.
Your dad just wanted to point the blonde one.
I don't know how much reference that holds, just
no,
my mother was
I was just getting on to the point, okay, it implies, obviously, I've been listening to a lot of ABBA growing up, but, like, it never resonated with me. They're a bit grand. I'm, like, totally indifferent to ABBA. Don't love them. Don't hate them.
I'm sorry. I can't believe for a second that there isn't one single ABBA song that resonates with you. That you listen to the lyrics of that song and think, I have at some point in my life felt like that. I challenge you to go listen to all the ABBA songs and tell me there isn't one song that you can say, I can relate to what the lyrics of that song are saying.
All my mom's music, Phil Collins is the one that resonated with me more. I like Phil Collins way more than I like ABBA. Where's the Phil Collins musical? That's what I want.
There's an ABBA song or two that I like, but I don't know if it resonates with me.
I don't know.
Like, I'm the one missing out.
You've never wanted money, money, money. You've never like the winner. You never felt like in a shitty situation where you're the loser and the winner's fucked off with it all and you're left in the shit pile.
I can't get into that song because I know it's written by millionaires.
There's
how about
so
the winner
many
takes
songs.
I don't know, what's that song about?
The winner taking it all.
The loser standing small.
That's one more line and we're getting done for copyright strike.
Having like Mamma Mia, like being attracted to someone that does absolutely no good for you, and you know it, but you can't help it.
Can we talk about the daughter being a fucking psychopath?
She...
Why? Okay.
I can kind of see it.
Insane.
Second appearance by Amanda Seyfried on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Is she a psychopath?
Yes.
Because she invites...
Why is she reading about her mother boinking random lads? What kind of teenage daughter reads about, and then, .. Oh, mammy! You fair fucks here?
Honey, how he thrills.
Why? Like, it just weirds me out.
Well, I wouldn't care about knowing about my mom's sex life when she was younger.
Ooh, felt that.
But you're right, I probably wouldn't be reading her diary.
And then let's invite these three lads who they've never spoken to.
It might be a different case. You knew who your dad was growing up. We all knew who our dad's hero was growing up.
But
maybe it might be a different story if you're just excited at the prospect. Rather, she's not excited at the prospect of the fact her mother had sex. She's excited at the prospect of this could be a potential dad.
That she now actually has names.
You know, she has some information because she's just never been told anything her whole life.
Why does she need to though? Like, she got on fine without her dad because,
that's for none of us to say or judge on because we've all grown up with two parents in our lives. I mean, I don't know what I'd be like, but I know people that I've known who didn't know one parent or the other very well were always curious about that parent, always wanted to know because it's kind of just everybody around you growing up has a mom and a dad.
If your man fucked off and never bothered to call, I wouldn't, like, why would you need him? Like, I wouldn't give a shit.
But she didn't know, from the storyline, she didn't know whether her dad fucked off or just didn't know about her or what. She knew nothing about her dad because Donna wouldn't tell her anything.
All that she knew was a one-night stand and her mother never told her anything more, so...
Yeah. And she should watch Mamma Mia too. That'll tell her a lot.
It's probably James Bond since she went to so much rebound sex after Jane Bond's dumped cocktail.
Her real dad is probably like, if the writers had to reveal it, it'd be Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, it would be James Bond. Who cannot fucking sing to save his life?
It's too much of a happy ending movie to make it one of the other two.
Lads, can we make fun of Pierce Brosnan singing?
Yeah, but then like you think like, you know, if it was one and the other two, that means like, you know,
there'd be no
Pierce Brosnan was the stepdad anyway because he ended up getting married at the end, and one of the other two could have a biological child.
Like, this is Tom Cruise's accent.
Then maybe Harry, because he is gay, so he can't have, well, he can't have biological children with a man. So,
wait, who's gay?
Harry.
Which one's Harry again?
Harry Headbanger. Colin Firth,
He's gay. Then why did he boink Mary Streep?
How did you not get that in the movie at all?
Why did
he even reveals it. He's a bit like, you know, Donna, you were the first girl I ever loved. Ashley, you were the last. And the last.
And then
he looks at the guy, the guy in Greece, and they have a little dancing.
And even like when all the women are all over him in Vula Vula and Gimme Gimme Gimme, he's like, ugh.
But does Julie Waters not get with him at the end or something?
No, that's Bill Anderson.
Bill Anderson.
Oh.
Well,
then there's the one with the scary nose not get with him.
No, she doesn't get married.
Also, the movie's
she gets with the young fella and she sings, "Does your mother know that you're out?"
Oh, you're right. Yeah, the very tender lid.
Can we just return to something Richard said a while ago? Chris Brosnan singing.
Yeah, it's fucking
scary. He's not a singer.
What's with all the Pierce Brosnan fucking defendists out lately?
He's not a good singer, but it's
I still like him in that movie.
Yeah, he goes well with Donna.
Yeah,
but if he can't...
I think the bad singing actually adds to it, because in all fairness, bad singing in Abigail.
What kind of mental gymnastics is this?
How realistic is it that everybody can sing? It's
I think
not.
In a musical,
so
you
they needed.
Be able to sing.
Yeah, it's a musical. Like, it should be at least serviceable singing.
This is why I don't like
in the West End show, the Pierce Brosnan character, well, he's not Pierce Brosnan, but the same guy. What Sam was an excellent singer.
Like, if he can't sing, maybe he shouldn't be singing here!
I think for the movie, it was so comedic as well that having a bad singer just kind of helped add to that.
Mental gymnastics.
Plus, he was a big name, and that was part of the casting.
Okay.
They had Meryl Streep, Colin Firth, Pierce Brosnan. Like, they had big names in that movie.
That's fucking retarded. He's a big name, so that excuses him from not singing.
No, I'm not saying it excuses.
But would you prefer
that
they'd gotten the actor and got someone different to sing his part?
I would prefer
I prefer if they just hired a singer.
Someone who serves. A lot of actors can sing. Why did they need Pierce Brosnan?
Maybe there was nobody that kind of just clicked. I think most Mamma Mia fans come away and they don't care. Because to be honest, maybe you two weren't. But when I watch that movie with Crystal and Siobhan, with Crystal and Kate, or with my mom and dad, we were all singing. Nobody knew who was a good singer or not in that, because we were all singing along to it.
My dad, I saw this movie in the cinema when it came out with my dad, My dad before that, like my dad, my mom, myself, my sister went to see this Mamma Mia film when it first came out. The last movie my dad saw in the cinema before that was Titanic.
Yeah.
11 years.
Yeah, the next film my dad saw in the cinema after Mamma Mia 1 was Mamma Mia 2.
Joe should have gone seen Blade Runner 2049.
So it clearly attracts an audience that never go to the cinema.
Just real quick on the topic of the actors before we move on. This is why I don't like movie musicals, because they cast famous actors and not people who can sing.
Yeah,
you know, like,
that's a fair point.
I don't dislike music. Like, I love Phantom of the Opera. I love the stage show, but like the movie, like Emmy Rossum singing, was not good. Like
Jared Butler isn't a good singer, Vincent.
No, he wasn't. It doesn't compare at all. And this is the exact same way. And you saw it live, so I'm assuming it must be a real
watching,
down, right?
Oh, like watching something live, I think, will always be better. Why do we go and spend, even when we actually buy someone's album, why do we not waste our money, but use our money to go and see them live? It's a different atmosphere. Something happens when there's a live performance in front of you. When I went to see it in the West End in London, it was the best show I've ever been to. It was so much fun. It was so funny. The singing was brilliant. The dancing, there was just something amazing about it. You felt like you were there in Greece with them, even though there wasn't the backdrop and everything like there is in the movie.
I'd imagine so, because you'd have somebody up there singing their fucking lungs out.
But
not Pierce Brosnan.
This was just meant to be to bring to a wider audience of maybe people who would never dream of going to the... I can't see your dad going to the West End.
No, dad would never
to watch
on
a musical.
And go to see it.
Even if it was in Dublin, I can't see him going up to watch it. This is like to bring people into their living rooms and, you know, put it on at Christmas time. Type thing. It's just, like I said, it's just meant to be a bit of fun.
But that doesn't mean it has to be of lesser quality than the stage show.
But it's
always
going to be of lesser quality than the stage show.
I mean, I know what I said earlier, but there is one example I can think of. Like Little Shop of Horrors, the movie, is way better than Little Shop of Horrors, the stage show.
Well, how do you know? Because you haven't seen every version of the stage show.
I've seen two versions of it.
Well, still, there could be like your local...
I saw it on
U
the
Club
West End.
Could do something and... Then you could see it on a fucking, like you said, the West End or something. Like, what I went to see Mamma Mia in 10 years' time, if I go again, it mightn't be as good. It might be a different cast and crew, and you might do it a different way, or it might be a different singer. So, that's why the theatre is always going to be slightly different every time. It's part of the magic, but it could be bad. Whereas when you put on a movie, that's what you're getting, no matter how many times you watch it.
I think they should have just taken away the crazy daughter and her mates from this film and made it about Meryl Streep, Julie Waters and her mate with the crazy nose and Pierce Brosnan and Conan Firth and the Swedish fellas, because the three of those had a good dynamic.
Yeah.
Like the two, oh, the three lads, they were just like, why are you here? Oh, I boinked this one 20 years ago, and they were like, oh yeah, that was a good shag. Oh, she was savage.
They had to fit the story around the songs. The whole point of Mamma Mia is to fit the story around these songs.
It's
you have to try and fit these particular songs. Like, lots of musical songs are written for the story. This was the other way around.
Yeah,
but this
the
is
songs
are
already written and well known, and you had to fit them around the characters and the story.
But that's not very hard. You could do it like you could do that in any way. Money. She needs fucking money. You know,
yeah,
like
it's a hackney contrived story to facilitate songs. Basically was. But can I ask, what would you say the film connects with you on an emotional level, what would you think of the film if ABBA had never existed, like these were just original songs? Would you like it as much? Because I think it would make no goddamn sense. It would be weird.
I don't, because it's hard
it's
to
hard
imagine
to,
a world
yeah.
where I don't know ABBA songs and where I didn't grow up on it. Like when I listened to ABBA, I remember family parties, I remember my nana, I remember singing in the car. Like, I have too much of an emotional connection to even contemplate that. I think I would still like the songs.
I think, like, yeah.
I think I would still find the characters funny, but I don't know if I would like it as much as I do, because the reason that you go to see Mamma Mia in the first place is you like ABBA or you like their songs.
Yeah, I think you just need to be an ABBA fan. Like, I love the Daft Punk anime, which is a load of shite, but Daft Punk are in it, so I like it. So yeah, it's for ABBA fans.
And there's a lot of them out there.
A lot. About 615 million of them out there, according to box office results.
Well done, Richard. Nicely done. Well played.
Now, stop getting jealous, Connor. But
all I can take away as a film, as somebody who's totally like, whatever about ABBA, the old people, their three dynamics, the three women, the three outlets, they had really good dynamics. And I would have nearly liked it better if it was some other contrived story for them meeting up with the time they bind her or the time they bunked whoever.
We're going to watch Mamma Mia 2 tomorrow and you'll see it all.
Tomorrow? I'm not going to the fucking cinema tomorrow.
No, you're going to...
Going to do what?
Going to do a bit of dodgy stuff.
I don't think it'll be available to watch in the corridor.
Well, yeah. Why would I want to watch a can rip or something? Even if I was to do that, which I never would. I don't pirate. I'm a good
you
pirate.
You did a cinema, Nina. We'll just pop down there.
But... I just saw Crystal. Oh yeah, actually, Mamma Mia 2. Here's the thing. No, here's a quick little funny story about this. Last week, I was gonna bring my girlfriend to see that because she wanted to go see that, and I looked up the sights of the Odeon and it said 5 o'clock. I went to Castle Troy Odeon. And I was like, man, the last fucking Mamma Mia was at 2 o'clock, and the next one's on at about 8:40. I was like, what? I looked it up on the website. Nope, I looked up the one for Waterford. So then we just went to go see Christopher Robin anyway because that was on in an hour. And we both wanted to see Christopher Robin. And that's like, that sound. And then for a student card, because my girl, she's a student card, we get a popcorn and a Coke. And I said, yes. And I presumed we were going to go get that in an hour when it was time to go see the fucking film. What do we do? She gives us the popcorn. So I'm holding around a popcorn and Coke like a wanker for an hour. I had to put it in the back seat of my car in the seatbelt.
Okay, fuck this. You're editing it.
Hmm?
You're editing it.
I'm editing me whole.
No, you have your awesome editor... Mug.
He went to the same film school that I did for a year.
Yeah, but it's like your...
Yeah, well, lots of people went to the same school as Einstein. Doesn't mean they invent the fucking atom bomb.
Alright, so last comments on Mamma Mia.
Not my fucking jam. I don't care about whatever.
It had a lot of ethnic stereotypes that annoyed me.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
A mediocre film with a kind of contrived plot to facilitate some ABBA songs.
Karen.
I enjoy this film. Like Glo said, it's a feel-good film. You put it on, you sing around. You don't actually pay a whole pile of attention to the film. When I watched it, I even watched the sing-along version. So in all fairness, we were doing more singing than watching the film. And like, you just kind of, like, you literally spend the next couple of hours just having ABBA songs stuck in your head. It's very effective.
Would this film do so well today now that people have Chromecast and they can just throw ABBA songs on YouTube or Spotify and the TV?
They had YouTube playlists in 2008 as well.
Yeah, but they didn't have Chromecast or Spotify.
Oh, well, clearly the sequel to be doing quite well.
The songs are done in a slightly different way and it gives you a story.
Pierce Brosnan sings them.
Well, like, one of my favourite songs of Mamma Mia is Does Your Mother Know?
And that's a completely different rendition because they've changed the gender.
But it's also even the tempo and all that is different, the ABBA song, to the actual, why are you making that face, Richard?
What
to the actual song in that ABBA do. So, and I prefer the Mamma Mia version.
That doesn't go anywhere, that whole subplot, but you're one from The Good Wife and...
It was literally Barton. Just for that song.
Yeah, see, that's it. It's just...
But, like, basically... You do see him flirting with her... And she's much older than him. And then she sings a song and basically tells him, you know, it's not going to go anywhere because he's too young. Like, does your mother know that you're out? And then that's it. They're done. Like, it added a bit of comedy. That's all it was for.
Fitz, you're going outside?
Yeah.
Oh.
God, it's warm here.
Right.
Fitzy's left the podcast, lads.
You can continue on.
Okay.
All right, up next...
Up next is the film Ponyo, directed by Hayao Miyazaki, who was a mistake. And I picked this movie. And Ponyo is basically about Fujimoto, who's this kind of weird underwater fella who has a fuck ton of little tadpoley fish lads because he rode the ocean goddess lady. And one of them just kind of strives up to the land and finds this little kid who likes to play outside. They live on the coast somewhere in Japan. And basically that little tadpole thing bites his finger, bites his ham sandwich, gets a taste for human blood, gets a taste for ham, and just goes fucking mental for ham. Causes a tsunami for ham. and it is fucking amazing. This film is savage. The film budget was 3.4 billion yen, which is $34 million. And it made the US box office of $208.8 million, which is probably something fucking unmeasurable in the end. And, like, this film, like, okay, it's Ghibli. But Ghibli also managed, I found, like, this is probably one of the best. The opening scene where nobody says nothing, and it's just your man working in his weird little lab, and you see the Ponyo tadpole go out. Like, that's one of the best animated things I've seen in my life.
I found that one of the most weirdest beginnings to a film.
Yeah, it was gorgeous!
I was pretty looking, I won't lie.
Not just pretty looking, like, next level god tier 10 out of 10. Fucking amazing.
The way you described it, it sounded like it could have been like a Roland Emmerich blockbuster or something. It's got a taste for blood, it's got a taste for ham, and it's coming with a tsunami this summer.
I wish I said pig flesh instead of ham. But, like, it's so fucking beautiful and gorgeous. My God. Like, they always manage to top themselves. The water, the backgrounds, the everything in this. The characters, the way they look and act.
It's not nicer looking than, what's it called? Fucking Spirited Away.
It is nicer than Spirited Away. I will say that now.
It's been a million years since I've seen it, but I remember thinking Spirited Away just kind of looked a bit arbitrary.
Arbitrary?
The world was looked a bit arbitrary to me. It didn't seem to have any rhyme or reason.
The world was obviously a fucking Japanese whorehouse.
But what I mean is, there was more to Spirited Away, like, in terms of art direction and stuff like that, than this movie. I thought this movie was a lot more basic than that.
Well, yeah, I think that's why people were underwhelmed, and I was too, honestly. I wanted to watch this because I heard people like it better the second time, and yeah, I don't know, I've seen this like 8 years ago or something, I don't know, a long time ago. And Jesus, like, I think it's just because, like, at this run, Miyazaki had lots of action things with fucking Spirited Away and Howl's Castle and
Lupin the Third, that's another one.
Oh, yeah. Like, and then he came out of retirement for the 80th time and he made this, and it's fucking savage. And I know you two plebs watched the fucking dub.
I'd wanted to find a sub because I do like watching films with subs.
I just found the first one that said something about saying it in English or having any sort of English association with it. But I found it the weirdest version of the Little Mermaid I have ever seen.
It is, but parts of it are actually probably the most accurate versions of the Little Mermaid.
Yeah, you know, he was directly inspired by the Hans Christian.
Well, obviously, that's very clear.
There's a couple. My issues are the chicken leg thing. Like, why does she?
That looks
cute. It does.
Yeah, it's weird when she's in her half.
It's not too bad when she's got like chicken legs. She's got chicken hands and chicken legs. It's just a bit weird. And then the, like, getting... My biggest issue was a five-year-old is a five-year-old and cannot actually say that he is going to love somebody unconditionally for the rest of his life. He's five. He actually thinks the world revolves around him. He thinks that everybody in the world is there solely for him. Now, I know the character seemed a lot more mature than a five-year-old, but that, like, he's five. And he also shouldn't have been left alone in a fucking rainstorm by himself.
No, I think the parenting in this is so wrong. One, it's like they get to the stage where, don't go back to your house, woman. They're telling you not to cross this path that is dangerous.
Yeah.
Yet you decide to drive your car through it anyway.
Like, she knew she was going to make it.
You don't know that. You're endangering your child and then you leave
your
child.
Hey, the child
there.
Can swim, can't he? He can
go
swim.
Wait a second now. She left her
child. And
there
was a longer route that she just could have gone around, which she ended up using later that day anyway. So why not take the safer route in the first place?
But the child can swim.
Not really.
That's no.
Also,
she left a child by himself to mind another child. And also, I thought it was pretty bad parenting when the dad rings up and is like, can't make it, and she's crying and throwing stuff around the place and stops cooking the dinner. And yes, you might be pissed off. If I had a kid and Aiden was like, oh, I'm not coming home, whatever, I'd be like, for fuck's sake. But I'd go into a different room and I'd ring Karen or Kate or Crystal or something and I'd bitch to them. I wouldn't do it in front of my child.
But some people might.
Yeah, well, it's bad.
It is bad, but I don't think the movie just...
Well, the mother, I don't know.
It makes her, like, she is unhinged from the start, kind of.
But, like, I think it's presented as a fault that she has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I had a big issue with him being left on his own during the rainstorm. And then I had another big issue with the whole you must, you know, I can't pronounce his name, but must...
Sasuke.
Must say that he, you know, will love Ponyo unconditionally and all this kind of stuff and accept her for who she really is. Like, sorry, he's fucking 5.
I don't agree with you, Glow. That's my one gripe with the film is I just find the whole love thing about a 5-year-old to be a little bit hammy.
Creepy.
I got bored around the time they were cooking ramen.
What? No, that's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
Ramen or that scene?
The ramen bit. I just said I agreed the love thing was just kind of a little bit kind of gacky-like.
We were at, what, that's like 2/3 into the movie and we're at the eating ramen stage. I was like, oh man, this should be the part where things are happening.
Things you know? Were happening though. Like.
It doesn't happen. Things don't happen until the last 15 or 10 minutes.
I love the fact that Ponyo's a little shit and she spits water in everyone's faces and steals food. I find that hilarious.
Yeah, look, the art direction was nice and it's generally nice, but... And I like Miyazaki well enough, but I thought this was pretty disappointing, to be honest.
You need to watch it again.
Maybe I'll watch it in 10 years.
Do.
We'll do it again for the podcast.
I love the fucking really old cranky woman at the house. She reminded me so much of Miyazaki himself.
She reminds me of an old woman who used to live down the street from me called Betty Rob.
Was she just a cranky bollocks who was like, "Sir Daddy!"
Yeah, well, we used to go trick-or-treating there. She'd tell us to go away.
Yeah, oh. she But she was right, wasn't she? Those fishes come out of the water. There's a tsunami, and there was basically a tsunami, so...
The only one thing I didn't kind of like as well, but I kind of forgave it, was... I found, like, Miyazaki's very fucking environmentalist, but I found in the beginning and even towards the end... All like the whole like pollution thing was a little bit too fucking shoved down our throats. Especially the fact that the sludge and shite and muck actually looks beautiful animated did not help derive his point saying that this is bad. He should have made it look disgusting. He made the sludge look gorgeous.
So why does Miyazaki hate anime fans?
Why? Because anime fans are fucking freaks. That's why. You know me.
Aren't you? Yeah. I was gonna say, aren't you an anime fan?
Anime fans, what do they love? They love tentacles. They love little girls. They you know, like, otakus. They're degenerate, but I don't know. I don't
Please
think...
Please tell me you don't like tentacles and little girls.
I like little girls with tentacles. I really like the fucking world he builds as well. Just a little small kind of coastal town and everyone kind of knows each other.
Yes.
Like, I like the fact you notice within, like, just this the scenes of, like, the teacher saying, like, oh, does Betsy have a cold and all this. I like that kind of subtle world building in this too, like.
The poor Fardo, he's really going to come back home and be a bit like, oh yeah, now we have a daughter as well. She was a fish. It's kind of a bit of revenge for, like, you know, you not
yeah,
keeping in touch.
That's another thing I was a bit unsure about. Is the child supposed to love her unconditionally as his sister or as something else? And what was the mother talking to so long to the sea mother about, and why were they worried about her? And
I suppose, like, the sea mother is kind of a bit like, yeah, I'm kind of giving you responsibility for raising my
How
daughter.
How did
Liam
Neeson boink
Yeah, but she didn't even know her daughter.
Yeah, but Ponyo's special because she's, like, a little bit human, and it's kind of left to thought, was she, like, human before?
Yeah,
because they're so special about
this. And a 5-year-old love it? So you're 5, you meet a magical fairy, like, I'm just gonna give it, and then you're told, right, will you love this fairy forever? Oh my god, I'll totally love this fairy forever, because you're thinking they're magical and I'm 5, this is amazing. Ponyo has to lose her magic to become human, so is he really going to love her unconditionally?
Probably not. That was stupid. And I was trying to think, like, what, how could they work this? Could they, like, make and say love her like a sister, love her like family, love her like a friend? Like, I don't know why they had to be so.
And then she had to kiss a bubble and kiss the bubble, that kind of.
Well, the bubble thing was to make it more innocent, so they're not like two kids literally shifting the gowls off each other.
What you mean is, you don't mean romantic love, right?
Well, that's what I'm confused as. Of any of it, because I think the only person a 5-year-old can love unconditionally is their parents.
But I agree, Batman. Even if it's not a romantic love, like, a 5-year-old is not capable of making the emotional investment of quote-unquote loving someone or something for the rest of the time.
Yeah, that, like, especially if you're, so Ponyo was able to make boats bigger. Like, I'm in the mind of a 5-year-old. Oh my god, this girl can change into a fish, she can make the water move, she can turn boats bigger, she can, you know, fix the generator thing. He's thinking, oh my god, she's amazing.
Yeah, but she gives up on her magic, though.
Part of why he thinks she's amazing is because of her magic. Because he's five. He's not going to actually see much past that. Don't get me wrong. I thought it was a nice movie. But they are my issues with it. Like, you know, with the storyline. It's kind of like a five-year-old is going to think that this Ponyo is beautiful and everything. But a lot of it because of her magic. And then she loses her magic to become human. She's just like him. She's just like the girls he goes to school with. What's going to make her Ponyo?
Ham.
Should I care about the mechanics of the world or something? Or is it just Miyazaki and I should just be like, oh, whatever. Should I care about the... Because no. I'm just watching this movie and I'm going, oh, all those goldfish, okay. They can magically turn into massive fish, fine, whatever.
Well, I say when it's magic things, yeah, whatever. Like, yeah, magic. So as long as it doesn't contradict.
They can only turn into magic fish, though, because they had that...
The potion kind of thing.
The potion spilled out. It's not... They couldn't do before.
I just feel like there are so many things in this world where it's like, oh, this is possible. Okay, whatever. Fine. Who cares?
Yeah. But, Glo, did you watch this with, like, kids? Because you always watch the kiddie movies on this podcast with kids.
I don't always... But no, I watched this by myself in my room.
Aww.
Because I had to watch it before we came here.
Do you think the kids who you normally show us to enjoy it? Because like, they found Wall-E kind of fairly boring and slow paced. So I'd imagine, like, how do you have this for like this 2 minute scenes or just landscape or fish or whatever? Like.
Yeah, I don't. I think maybe Joe might have liked it. But.
Karen's dead.
I don't know. My nephew Joe. But I'm not sure. Like the two smaller ones, the seven-year-olds would have just been bored at certain points and started talking or playing. I don't think this is, even though it's very innocent, I don't think it's a cartoon that like kids are like, Ponyo, Ponyo, put it on. Oh, stop.
Yeah.
That was so annoying.
That was a fucking hilarious. That's your own fault for watching the dub.
All you have to do was ask me. I watched it in pristine quality in a subtitled version.
The quality was great, and even the dubbing wasn't that, like, it wasn't like when we've watched other stuff that Richard's suggested, and the like dubbing was shit. It was actually, it flowed pretty well, and it seemed to kind of, their lips seemed to move in time with what was being said. I was a bit distracted at first by Liam Neeson being that weird sea person.
Did Liam Neeson ever say, I want my daughter back in the whole film? Because that's an obvious take.
He's
in fucking
done
illusion.
That 3 times.
I don't
only three.
Think so. Well, would the dialogue then be that different, what we watched versus what you watched?
Well, like, we see, the thing with the dub Miyazaki's is, like, a lot of those scenes where there's just kind of silence and stuff going on, in the other in the dub versions, they throw in things like, I'm at the hillside, I'm at a bathhouse, I'm in a forest, you know, just
yeah,
kind,
it was
of,
not
kind
that,
of babysit.
Yeah, plenty many scenes
yeah.
where it was quite quiet.
And, like,
yeah,
the Kiki...
The only thing that was sounding is maybe, like, you know, if they were on the country road, you might hear the car engine or something.
The
like
biggest
that.
Miyazaki controversial dub is Kiki's Delivery Service. Has anyone seen that?
No.
It's
no.
fucking amazing. But like,
I don't
watch
any of this stuff
it's
unless
one of,
you make us.
It's one of the last ever things that Phil Hartman was in. And basically towards the end, Kiki's cat, Phil Hartman, voices it. And like, Phil Hartman does an amazing job, as he always does. But in the Jap version, the cat doesn't talk anymore because... it's a sign that Kiki is growing up and she doesn't need the cat assisting her. But in the dub, the cat still talks at the end because it's fucking Phil Hartman. You're not going to tell him to stop talking.
I hate dubs. I think they ruin movies. The acting's always really bad, you know?
Yeah, dubs is like... There can be good dubs,
especially
but I usually try not to...
live-action version, because then it never matches.
Well, there's no excuse for live-action dubs. No excuse.
Nah.
Fuck that shit.
Yeah, no, a cartoon is different.
Ah, but it's still not though, at the same time.
Yeah, but, I mean, you'd say it's different, but it kind of isn't, because anime has such a long history with terrible dubs.
Yeah, it wasn't until Cowboy Bebop that it was a good one. So, Ponyo boys, final thoughts.
It was okay.
I liked to look at it. It was quite a nice film. I'm glad I watched it, but I'm probably never going to watch it again.
Yeah, second that. It was nice but a bit weird, and I couldn't see myself being like, oh yeah, do you know what I'll watch now that I have an hour and a half free? Ponyo. It's not gonna happen.
I fucking loved it. I thought it was savage.
Why do you like it so much?
Because it's just so fucking cute and amazing looking.
Okay.
Anyway.
90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Rotten Tomatoes is full of shite. Anyway, lads, the next movie is Tropic Thunder.
I'm going to get a drink.
Okay. Oh, can you fetch me a can out the fridge?
And we need to get me a bottle of cider.
Okay, well, I'm going to go to the bathroom as well.
Anyway, the next movie on this list is Tropic Thunder. That was written by Louis Theroux's cousin and Ben Stiller, and directed by Ben Stiller. And the budget was $92 million, and it made back about double that. Like, I'm looking at this, and it's just a little bit more than double. And this movie was picked by Gloria. Tell us about it.
Okay, so this movie is basically a parody of a selection of war films and action movies, and they just take the absolute piss out of them all. I actually picked this film because I thought, that's one film out of the four that we picked that my boyfriend would watch with me. Then these bastards decided we'd watch it all together.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, I originally wanted to watch Ponyo together, but the two boys wanted to watch it on their own for some reason.
I think I wanted to watch Mamma Mia because it would make it easier.
The movie wasn't as good as I remembered it being, but it was funny. I did watch it like years ago and I did think it was very funny, but I don't know, I think we kind of talked through some of it and it wasn't as good as I thought it was going
to
be.
It's fairly solid. I think the reason why we spoke through a lot of it is because I just think a lot of the lines, they're badly fucking put out. Like, you can't really hear what they're saying a lot of the times either, because they're like Robert Downey Jr., who's brilliant in it. Sometimes he kind of does the whole black voice a little bit too gruff, where it's kind of hard to understand them. And like, I don't know, a lot of the movies just feel like the lines have felt like they're put in post or re-recorded for that, which is a shame because there's some really good quotable things, like when Jack Black is tied to the tree and he goes on about like sucking the juice out of the black lad's sack. That was fucking brilliant. Like,
it's not that funny. There's a long period in the middle that goes by without anything funny happening.
What bit? You want to move?
I think
I kind of agree with Fitzy. Like, there's past stuff funny, but then there's a lot of kind of stage where there's
I think
nothing
the best part
interesting
is
happening.
I think the best part is the opening like half hour.
Actually, yeah, I was just going to say, do you know all the little kind of clips that look like they're meant to be trailers for
those are amazing.
They're done really well, and they are quite funny. And then there's a couple of bits like when Robert Downey Jr. goes, "You people? What do you mean by you people?" Like, he's dressed
Robert
up like
Downey Jr. is in blackface.
Yeah, and he says to Ben Stiller, "What do you mean by you people?" And then the actual black guy is like, "What do you mean by you people?" And it's just brilliant.
That was very bold for Robert Downey Jr. because this kind of came out just when he was going through his renaissance and making a comeback. And if this was written, like, it goes to show, like, the joke is good, that he is a Daniel Day-Lewis-esque actor who takes himself so seriously he literally changes skin to black. Because this could have, like, this could have easily gone so wrong.
I don't think
Roman going running around the back face. It's good they
did
it tastefully.
I don't think you get away with this today.
I think you would today.
I don't know.
Honestly, no, because it's done well. Like, it's done, like, they're making him look like a fucking gobshite. It's just done at that perfect tuning.
Can you even
like,
do a blackface ironically these days?
But it's not even ironically. It's just kind of like taking like Russell Crowe or any of these actors who take themselves so goddamn fucking seriously or commit to an acting where it nearly kills them, like Daniel Day-Lewis wearing all those clothes during wintertime for Gangs of New York and stuff like.
But Gloria's right, the best part of the Traitors. Those are spot on, especially Simple Jack. Which, oh my god, that was so cathartic. There's something I've noticed about movies, just maybe not so much anymore, but for definitely for a good few years, is that soundtracks always ripped off the famous bit from Shawshank Redemption. I swear to God, you would hear it all the time, and this movie does it like pitch perfect. It has got a pitch perfect Shawshank Redemption ripoff theme in it.
Oh yeah, the Shawshank temp music, where it's really heartwarming. It's fucking brilliant. The whole Simple Jack thing as well is just so fucking funny.
Yeah, it absolutely 100%.
That's just stands in the
But
table.
That's like the best part, and I don't think it ever reaches that high heights again. The best parts of the movie are where they parody movie tropes, Hollywood tropes. And I think everything in between that is a bit meh.
Why do you think it fucking stands? Like, there's some good fucking stuff in that. I like the whole ensemble cast. Like, it took him a while for me to like him, but like, I like when they're going through the jungle, toothless, he's the straight man, which like, you expect him to be the wimp that's bitched around. I like the fact like he's actually the most level-headed out of all these fucking gobshites.
Like, it's a good movie, but I think you're going to need to watch it with friends or in a group. I don't think you'll, like, I don't know. I think it just depends on the atmosphere. Before when I've watched it, there's been a couple of bits I did lol at, but I don't know.
Yeah,
it just.
We laugh? This is the question.
We laughed at. You guys laughed at the. Definitely laughed at the bit where it said you never go full retard.
Well, that's. Yeah, that's like.
I didn't laugh.
That is actually like a part of everyday.
But you said you didn't
though.
Recognize that's actually where that
yeah,
came
but that's
from.
That's become a famous internet like saying or something.
It's become an everyday fucking saying. You never go full retard. Like.
But this is the thing I always say to people when they tell me they liked, like, I don't know, The Big Bang Theory or anything like that. It's like, did you laugh? Do you laugh when you watch these shows? Like, if you laugh, it's fine. But we were watching this movie and I don't remember a burst of laughter from any of us.
Well, when the kid gets thrown off the bridge,
like,
fuck
the trailers
funny.
Were
I
good,
the
they were
people.
Amusing, but I didn't laugh.
You don't have to fucking guffaw like a
yeah,
full
you don't
retard
have,
what else is
to enjoy a comedy. Like,
what else is there
like, what
in a comedy? A comedy is there to make you laugh.
Yes, but it can also just kind of make you like watch it and you're there smiling to yourself. Like.
Well, then surely it's a merely okay comedy. And
no,
comedy.
Because like, what about an episode of King of the Hill? There's very few like
I
slap your
like King of the Hill.
Oh my god, what's wrong with you,
but,
man?
Like, there's lots of clever humor in it that's, you know, you kind of you think about the movies you watched and stuff like that, but you're right, there's no like moments where I was like, oh my god, my side hurts from that.
But that's like the only requirement of a comedy movie. It's like a horror movie and not being scared. That's like the only thing it has to do.
But what about a dry comedy movie though, like? Like, I'm not saying this is far from a dry comedy. It does have some a little bit of dry humor, but like a movie that has a dry tone. Like, say, I don't know, Annie Hall's the first thing that comes to my head, even though I don't think it's particularly great.
Well, I mean, maybe I'm the wrong person to ask for this book because I don't typically find scripted comedy that funny. But
yeah, no, even when we picked the films, we were like, I wonder how Fitz is going to take it. He's got three comedies to deal with.
And it's like, we looked at the cast like, oh, Jack Black, oh, Ben Stiller, oh. Because, like, they have done some weak things in the past, but this, I think this
yeah,
movie...
Yeah, all that was missing was Will Ferrell.
But this movie, I think this movie plays to their strengths, though, like. Danny McBride as well, like. Tom Cruise
yeah,
fucking
Tom
stole
Cruise
every scene
brilliant
he was
in. It, like, he really is. I think he kind of just stole the show.
Steve Coogan's good as the sort of Richard Stanley kind of figure. Who...
He's only in it for, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah,
well, Steve Coogan's always good though, in fairness, like, he just
yeah.
has something about him. Like, I liked all the kind of fucking pure like jabs at Crank rap, which were huge at the time, like your man's fucking drink, booty sweat and all
yeah,
this shit.
Can't
like,
say about a bad word about all that stuff.
Yeah,
it is absolutely, it hits the nail on the head.
Like, it is a really fucking good timepiece for all the parodies it has, like if you're even
following the fucking Eddie Murphy fucking
yeah the whole Madea Eddie Murphy fucking
yeah,
shit
Madea,
like,
oh.
yeah that was perfectly
oh,
like, and they get
so
Jack Black
much.
To do it and it actually pays to his strengths.
Wow, that must have I can only imagine if I'd seen it at the time how cathartic it would be, because I remember those Madea movies were everywhere in 2008.
Oh, they were fucking toxic. Like, come on, you have to say this is a fucking funnier than the Madea movie, and I know that's not much. ISIS beheadings are funnier than Madea's, like, but come on.
Did you just say that?
Yes I did. I'll say it again.
I would sooner watch an ISIS beheading video because at least they're short.
Oh my god.
At least you might get a good porn ad in the fucking bottom of the video for it.
I don't know. Can we return them?
Jesus Christ, lads. I thought Aiden and Alan were bad. That's just... at least they're shorter.
Well, come on, the pain is over fucking fast.
I don't
Would you rather die from fucking a horrible comedy or die from getting your head going?
You don't think
don't
Tropic Thunder is a horrible.
No, we're talking about Madea now.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Madea, guys.
Yeah, we've really gotten off topic, you know.
Yeah. Well, like, there's so many references and fucking things you have, like, how can you not go off topic?
The music was so the 2000s, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the cranked bits were. I loved the way they used fucking Fortress Sun for
low. Oh, but that song was everywhere.
Yeah,
like, everywhere. You couldn't avoid it.
This just triggers me. Anything about music from the mid-2000s.
Hey,
AKA the worst period.
You don't like your emo fucking gems. You don't like your fucking really bland Razor Rock, Coldplay, soft rock music.
50 Cent
proto mumble rap.
Where they just doing anyway
when you're like.
And there's this music playing really loud in the background, which doesn't help. But I thought the first half hour was good.
It was definitely better than the last hour.
I thought everything building up to and including the donkey punch scene was good.
Is that because you're a man? There was a lot of sex. I mean, a lot of sex.
They were not sexy people. They were not sexy people.
Really?
No.
The blonde one wasn't sexy?
She looks so smelly. She looked like she doesn't shower.
But they were all having this big orgy anyway, basically. They were all swapping partners and one fellow was just watching and then he got involved. He's the one who did the donkey punch.
And
that bit was weird to me. Maybe it's just because, you know, I'm one person and not in a room full of other people. Maybe I'm a weirdo, but that even was weird to me. I was like, this is going to be weird.
There's a reason why I picked Donkey Punch, though. And it's so I could tell this story about a certain lad. I'm not going to name names, no. But a certain lad was in Leaving Cert. It's not fucking me, by the way, but I know this lad. This lad, he was in Leaving Cert, and he had the house to himself. And he thought, like, I'll just flick on the telly. And this was on the telly. And it got to that scene in the boat, and he was a young lad. I mean, anything could set him off. And he was like, this isn't too bad, no. So he was there, you know, doing the dance with no pants to that scene. And as he climaxed, your one dies. And he said it was the worst wank he ever made.
Oh, my God. That would be a bad wank. But you know
that lad went to Trinity College.
It's coming.
Well, he came on it.
No, but you know something bad's coming. Especially the whole.
But hold on, if he turned on the TV, he just happened to be that scene, and he had no idea what he was watching.
If he hadn't heard the Donkey Punch story,
yeah,
because it's called Donkey Punch.
Yeah, but he didn't know what it was. I can tell you what a Donkey Punch is. I'm actually amazed at the lack of knowledge of Donkey Punch. I thought everyone kind of knew what it was. Like, this film was literally only made so they could call it Donkey Punch, because it's, you know, it's funny. It's like, oh, I can say Donkey Punch.
Okay, so this girl ends up dead.
Yeah.
As a result of this really stupid decision that one of the guys makes.
And then they continue to make a series of even stupider decisions.
That's where I lost interest.
For one, like me and Karen were pointing out that they wrap your one up in sheets to dispose of the body. Even though
they want to pretend she fell overboard.
Overboard, yeah. It makes no sense. Like,
okay, well, here's the thing. There's four of these guys. Only one of them is responsible for killing this girl. The other three guys don't give a shit whether or not this guy goes to prison.
One of the other boys does because it's his brother.
I don't think he did. I actually don't think he did.
I don't care if you don't get on with your brother. If Crystal or Edward got in trouble, there's one thing about going to prison for a night if they were just being drunk and stupid, but there's another thing going to prison for life because they've essentially manslaughtered someone.
But
during sex,
they, instead of just deciding to bring the boat into harbour and go to the police and show them this videotape of the incident happening, they instead come up with this really convoluted scheme to bury her at sea for literally no reason.
Well, they were afraid that he wasn't just going to get done for accidentally killing her, but for rape.
But they didn't rape her.
He was somewhat sober and she was out of her mind on drugs.
I don't know.
In today's, maybe not 10 years ago, in today's world, that would fit the consent is such a big thing. If I'm pissed and I have sex with someone and they're sober, that could technically be seen as rape.
But I don't understand. They have a tape of her fully alive and conscious and also smiling.
Yes, but she's out of her mind on drugs.
How would it?
But if they bought the body back, they obviously would have done an autopsy and tested her.
I don't know. That seems like a really sort of lame excuse.
I'm just giving you the devil's advocate of where their heads were. She's out of her mind on drugs. They're going to turn, because they even said it at some point that they're going to, it's going to be, you'll be done for rape. They did say that at some point in the movie.
Yeah, but I just, I don't know. Well, it doesn't work for me.
The insanity after that just gets just unreal.
There's seven, pretty much everyone ends up dead by the end of the movie about one girl.
And they all kill each other over ridiculous, like...
Yeah.
Why did they have a fucking garden swimmer on a boat in Spain?
So we had, in order,
it's a motor off the boat.
I thought it was a garden swimmer.
It's a motor off the boat.
Hold on. So we had a donkey punch, we had a stab, but that stab guy didn't die yet. Then we had a flare to the stomach.
When he jumped in the water and it only got bigger.
Yeah, then we had a flare to the stomach. Then we had someone removing the knife on purpose to kill a man. Then we had killing by strimmers. And then we had
I think it was a motor off a boat.
How could she take that off and carry it? Have you
seen
those yokes?
Remember they said that they left the motor. Remember the two girls escape at one point on this little kind of life dingy thing. And they're like, there's no fucking motor. And then they show a clip, a little thing back to the motor on the boat. So I think it was actually a motor that like was detachable. That's what she used
to
kill.
Okay,
in my head, canon is still a garden strimmer.
Not it doesn't matter that much, but it's a motor.
It does make more sense than a strimmer.
She slaughters a man, the nice guy, with a motor.
The nice guy. He wasn't actually trying to kill anyone. He was trying to actually save one.
And then she throws herself overboard.
Because film law dictates that there can only be one survivor in movies like this.
The last girl, literally.
I mean, this film felt a good 10 years late. Like, in the mid to late 90s, there were tons of these sort of rip-off of Tarantino movies where...
This doesn't seem Tarantino.
When he said this to me, I was like, Tarantino.
Well, what I mean by that is basically a post-Tarantino film is a bunch of people dealing with the fallout of a crime. And there were fucking loads of these. Very bad things. Like seven heads in a duffel bag.
Well, they just really handle the situation badly, and they just turn into horrible people, like in the snap of a second. Even the girl who seems so innocent. I know your man, right? Your man Bluey, that's the one who gets stabbed. Had the girl who apparently sounds like Jade Goody. Looks like Jade Goody.
She does. Yeah.
He was kind of. Their friend was already dead, and they were all sitting around eating bread waiting to call in. I can't remember why they were waiting to call in that she had fallen overboard, because she was clearly already dead. And for some reason he starts being really nasty to her and like starts grabbing her face and talking about how her boyfriend cheated on her because she wasn't sexy enough or something, and that he'd show her a good time, and where they just were doing anything
and everything able to apprehend him, like.
And then the flare?
That was hilarious. Come on, though. I'll give that. That's the one funny bit in the whole film. Apart from the bad acting.
It's a good scene, but it's so over the top and it doesn't like fit this film because it's so cartoony and ridiculous.
Exactly. Like why does it get bigger in the water? Like?
Basically, the main antagonist gets hit with a flare gun. They get stuck into his body and he burns alive.
Like, it lodges in his chest and it only gets bigger and bigger.
See, I would
have
thought he was the main antagonist. I would have thought your man who did the donkey punch was, because he hides the keys. He's the one who's, like, fiddling with the knife with Bluey.
Yeah, but
he's just a bit of a freak.
Back.
But this guy was
a creepy arsehole.
But this was the guy, the flare gun guy, was the one who was scheming for the first two-thirds of the film.
Well,
he's the one that comes up with the plan to bury her at sea and everything.
Yeah, but that's just because he is their kind of leader, but I don't know, he doesn't seem nearly as creepy or as bad as the Josh person who does the donkey punch.
I would say he's the main antagonist for the first two thirds.
Yeah, like he's the one with the bad brains, like, and the most probably malicious intent, like. Like, he's the one who's like least hesitant, like, to fucking fuck him over the boat or hurt the girls again if they threaten to call the guards.
I don't know, I thought your man was, I thought Josh was.
Why did they keep the tape that proves that they interfered with and disposed of a corpse?
Because they're creeps and it's good, you know.
Well, they kept that more against... Because, do you not remember at one point Josh says to Bluey, oh, Marcus is a skipper for this boat, so we technically anything that happened here is his fault and blah, blah, blah.
That seems like bullshit to me.
Yeah, but whatever. He thinks it might be bullshit in real life, but in the context of the film, it apparently wasn't. And he was trying to get Bluey on his side, and because he thought Bluey had thrown the tape over. So they knew that your man Josh was going to turn on them. So they kept
the
tape as insurance.
But why not just...
But that's what I said at the beginning. Why not just turn Josh over to the police and give them this tape that proved that Josh did it?
To me, because they're friends with the Sean guy, and that's his brother. I think they were trying to do it, and plus they were all high, right? They were all high. They were all absolutely high, except for the one good guy, and I think he was just in a state of like panic to protect his brother. I don't think Josh was high.
No, they all did drugs, Luke.
But they're all high, and they're all these terrible things after happening. They just made flash decisions, but they made such bad. Even the way they handled the girls, there could have been a better way to get them on side with what they wanted, without like viciously. Like they just made them terrified.
Resisted in my house, just happened to fit into the time frame. So it came down to three films: either Bride Wars, Watchmen, or Confessions of a Shopaholic. And Fitzy chose Bride Wars.
Yeah, well, I couldn't choose Watchmen. I hate that film.
It's 5 hours long.
Right, so tell us about Bride Wars.
Oh God, I don't know.
you sat here and watched it last night with us, well, so you should know.
Fitzy, last night you were saying I can see me and Glow going at each other's throats right now.
Yeah. Well, what's her name? Well, Kate Hudson?
Kate Hudson and Anne Hathaway.
They've been friends since they were girls, and I guess it's their dream to get married?
In the plaza.
Oh, the plaza. I can't remember.
June.
Whatever.
It's important. It's the whole, like, the plot. Right.
Yeah, it's the whole, everything pivots around
and
that.
Do you even remember why it's important to get married?
Well, I mean, they both get proposed to at the same time, and they go to this wedding planner. Wedding planner's assistant fucks up and she books them for the same date.
In the same place?
Yeah, at this place.
They don't really get proposed to.
Yeah, and then
one gets proposed to and the other one finds a ring and decides that she's getting proposed to. She doesn't even open... Does she open the box?
No.
No.
So she just finds a blue Tiffany box and she thinks she's getting proposed to. So she goes around telling everyone she got engaged.
All those things.
It was like a big era of all that kind of thing happening. So they were taking the piss out of these types of people.
Like the...
They just... Because they have tried to explain why they were being despicable at different moments of the film, it kind of lost like what Richard was saying. It should have just absolutely taken the piss out of them, but then it wouldn't have reached the audience. They were trying to reach an audience of younger girls.
Yeah.
Clearly, what age were you and Claire when you bought this DVD?
Like it's 10 years old. Owned it for like 8 years.
So yeah.
The end. It felt like it was written by three different people, because man's like, I didn't know you were like this 10 years ago, but I fell in love with the girl who was like this 10 years ago, so I'm leaving you for 10 years, even though I didn't know you were like that.
I get your confusion there, but me and Karen and Claire saw the breakup and everything, so Anne Hathaway and Chris Pratt break up in the end, spoiler alert, I should have said that beforehand, but basically, nowhere, but
his reasoning the girls was
totally... all saw that it was coming.
But no, because he made no sense, because he literally said... I didn't know you were like this 10 years ago. But then she says, you fell in love with that girl 10 years ago.
How did he
fall in love with somebody who he didn't even know existed?
He fell in love with a version of her 10 years ago.
But he just said he didn't know she was like this when he saw the video.
No, this didn't make any sense to me.
Like, this felt like it was written by four different people.
He only likes the Anne Hathaway character when she's nice and sweet and does everything.
Like, do you remember his comments about, I feel sorry for Daniel?
Yeah, because he
won't be able to control his wife and stuff. He wants to marry Anne Hathaway because she's placable. Like, she'll do what he says.
Won't embarrass him.
But the thing is, it's the line she says that I've changed. That makes no sense. She should have said, I'm not the person you think I am.
Yeah, but like, in real...
But
like,
she hasn't changed.
To be fair, in real life...
According to
this video. If you're in an emotional thing like that, where you're breaking up on your wedding day, you're not necessarily going to say the right words.
No, but this wasn't the right words. This made no sense. Like, this was just contradiction itself.
If she had said, I'm not the person you think I am, then I would have been fine with it. But the fact she said, I've changed. Well, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, I don't
She's this person now,
think
and
she
evidently
of, well,
was
I
this
think
person 10 years
she
ago.
She was
so
that person 10 years ago, just before she met him. Then when she kind of changed slightly to be this more kind of passive-aggressive person who just kind of did what people said and do what they want and people please her. But then she was kind of changing back to who she was just before she met him. She had changed, but she kind of changed.
Well, she should have said, "I've changed back then."
What? Well, did we not get caught what this was
this is like an essay that was due the night in before, and it starts off good beginning, good middle, but you're getting burnout, but you have to finish it because it's due the next day.